Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Good morning to you. Welcome in on this Monday, Grant and Danny, 106.7 The Fan. Danny is out. Pete is in. What's going on, buddy?
Guerrero present and accounted for. Good morning to you, sir.
Good to see you as always. We will be busy today. There is so much going on. The Caps play the Canes in Raleigh tonight. Game 6, best of 7 series, a win for Washington. And it's on to round 2 to meet Barry Trotz and the New York Islanders. Yesterday, the Nationals, trying to avoid a sweep at the hands of the lowly Marlins, needed Steven Strasburg to put his big boy pants on, and he did that. We'll break down his gem. We'll look ahead to their series with the Colorado Rockies. Plus, the NFL draft is now 3 days away. We will carry Doug Williams' press conference from Redskins Park live on the show at noon. And speaking of the Redskins, Ryan Kerrigan, who was at the Caps game, chugging a beer through his sweater in honor of TJ Oshie over the weekend, will join us to talk about his experience at the game at 1:30. There is a whole lot going on.
Isn't it amazing that a guy sitting at home with a busted clavicle having just had surgery could really rally 19,000 people to cheer loudly and lift his team? Because what we saw, not only from the crowd and the team together, it just seemed they were all one in unison in a real special moment on Saturday night. Now you hope that the play from Saturday night can continue over to Game 6 tonight.
I love sports. And people were electric at Capital One Arena, and they were giddy to see Devontae Smith-Pelly. He is more of a hero in this town than I really knew.
Dude, if he puts home that 2-on-1, that place would have disintegrated right on, as soon as the puck crosses the goal line.
Ted Leontis would have been doing construction on the arena because the roof would have blown off. He had a shot on goal in his second shift of the game. He had a huge hit in his first shift. He got a standing ovation immediately. His energy clearly made a difference. I think more than anything else, the team played inspired hockey without TJ Oshie. The result on Saturday night was the game maybe you've been waiting for from the Capitals. I don't think anyone was banking on a 6-0 shellacking of the Hurricanes, but that's what you got. They dominated them in every phase of the game. They outworked them in every aspect of Saturday's matchup. And in the end, the Grade 8 scoring the final goal for the Caps made it a half dozen.
A power play for Washington, and Ovechkin scores right off the draw. Blocker side, 6-0 Washington.
Follow the leaders. Nicholas Backstrom, couple of goals, 4 points. Alex Ovechkin, a goal, 2 apples, 3 points. He had 11 hits. You understand that some teams have 11 hits over the course of a game. Ovechkin himself had 11 hits. The Caps had almost 50. They beat the Hurricanes down.
His leadership has increased as his career has gone along, not only with, you know, the goal scoring. You take that for granted almost, but some of the other things, the intangible things that you have needed him to maybe do better through the years since the C has been put on his chest, even as his career has gone on now, he is doing even more of those things. He senses right now with a shorthanded roster that he has to do more than just score goals. We've seen him be a feeder, and we've seen him do those intangible things. We saw those certainly on Saturday for the Capitals. And again, question is, can you do that the next game? Can you build on that? Do you have the Hurricanes beaten down because you have maybe the greatest player left in the game still on your roster in this playoff, and he is doing all of the things that a captain is supposed to do out there on the ice?
Pete, I thought their fourth line was not only better than it's been at any point in this series, but it was better than it's been at any point in several weeks, and it was the first time we've seen that group together since early in the season. Chandler Stephenson, Nick Dowd, Devontae Smith-Pelly. Their third line, which hadn't showed up in the series, finally did. Brett Connolly scoring a goal. Carl Hagelin was a menace to society. They moved him up to the second line. I didn't really like that. His game was phenomenal, and he, I thought, made his mates around him a lot better. There was nothing about the Caps' performance that you could have improved. They were 3-for-4 on the power play, which is unheard of. A broken power play previously, by the way. They were 5-for-5 on the penalty kill. They carried play at even strength. You mentioned that they almost had 50 hits. Their leaders were exceptional. I mean, you're TJ Oshie watching at home with Lauren, Lenny, and Lila, and you're sitting there going, well, the boys are okay without me for at least tonight. They played an incredible game. How sustainable was that? You know, can they actually not feel the loss of TJ Oshie eventually? Of course not. But for at least that one night, all was well with the world. We'll see if they can go to Carolina and finally put together a quality 60 minutes on the road. They played a much better game 4 than they did in their debacle of a loss in game 3. But if you can't win tonight, then you got to grin and bear it and grit your teeth through a game 7 at home and try to win a 4th straight on home ice against the Canes on Wednesday. End this thing now. Speaking of ends, the Nats got out of Miami finally after what was early on an ugly series with the Marlins, and they salvaged a game thanks to Steven Strasburg having one of the better performances of his career. And Pete, we talked about this earlier off air, but you and I had the same feel going into this thing. They were desperate for him to throw well. He had not pitched particularly well in his previous 2 starts. Max Scherzer had an uncharacteristically poor outing on Saturday, and they were on the verge of being swept by the Marlins. They didn't score a run until the 4th. They only had 1 run until the 6th. And so if Strasburg had given up a couple at any point, they would have been trailing most of the day. He scatters 2 hits. He strikes out 11. Walked a pair in what was an epic 8 innings. He has now become the all-time leader in Nationals history in innings pitched.
1-2. Strasburg winds, delivers, swing and a miss. He blows him away with a fastball for his 11th strikeout of the afternoon. A 1-2-3 inning for Strasburg, cruising through 8 innings here in Miami.
Tall guy, 8 innings, 2 hits, 11 strikeouts, only walked 2, which had been a little bit of an issue in a couple of previous starts. His control and command really had deceived him a little bit. But just like the Capitals, who got the ancillary scoring the other night, the Nats got the ancillary hitting because no Anthony Rendon in the lineup. Of course, they've been without Trey Turner. Adam Eaton really seems to be in a solid groove here. He's got the average up to .317 after 2 more hits. But yesterday, without Rendon, you needed somebody in the middle of that lineup, and it was the veteran Ryan Zimmerman who comes up with 2 big hits. It's Brian Dozier who homered for the 2nd time in 3 games. So you want to allow yourself to think that maybe he is finally starting to come around, see the ball a little bit better, make better contact, making harder contact, getting a little more velocity off of his bat. You're allowing yourself now to maybe think that that's coming around for Brian Dozier. So just as the Capitals got ancillary scoring from the guys like Connolly the other night, the Nationals finally got some big ancillary hits from guys like Zimmerman and Dozier who weren't doing that to support Steven Strasburg's big outing. But what was interesting, I know Kyle Bearclaw walked 2 guys, but it's like Davey Martinez just must call on Sean Doolittle.
Yeah, I want to get to that in a second because I couldn't believe that either. Zimmerman, by the way, had 1 homer in 17 games before hitting 2 yesterday. Yeah. 4th inning, solo shot. And then in the 9th inning, another solo home run. You mentioned Dozier hit his 3rd of the year. Wilmer Defoe, an RBI single. Howie Kendrick had a sacrifice fly for the 5 runs for the Nationals. But yes, Strasburg was the story on the pitching front. I'm shocked that Doolittle pitched in that game, and I really don't know why he did. Danny and I on Friday, literally a few days ago, went through the numbers on how alarming the usage rate for Sean Doolittle is. He's on pace to throw over 500 more pitches than he's ever thrown before. He was on pace as of the weekend to throw 80-plus appearances. Now, I know he didn't have to throw on Saturday or Friday, but to have used him in a game when you're up 5 runs, when Bearclaw, and I know he had thrown over 20 pitches, but has only gone 2/3 of an inning, let him give up a run or 2, and now if it's a save situation, you got to come in and get an out, okay. But Davey Martinez is managing early this season like every loss is 1 too many, and there's nothing necessarily wrong with that until you're starting to wear guys down. To me, that was the perfect game to just stay off of Sean Doolittle, and he didn't do it.
Only bring him in if you have to, because history tells you, based on your rotation going for the next 3 days, you're going to have to use him at some point in Colorado. That's just the nature of the beast.
You got Hellickson, who goes five innings at a time. You got Anibal Sanchez coming up in this series, who goes five innings at a time. You're going to need your bullpen rested.
No question. And even if you have to go to somebody else to get that out, if you think Bearclaw's losing his control a little bit because he did walk two guys, but he also struck out two, at 5-0, you still got to let Bearclaw or somebody else finish that game just to give Sean Doolittle another day. Because the one thing Sean Doolittle has been hittable here of late. I was there. I watched it Thursday when San Francisco, when he pitched that last inning against San Francisco. I mean, people are making contact against him right now. And I think because a lot of it right now is because of the overusage here early in the season.
Yeah, his ERA still sub one, gave up his first run in the aforementioned outing on Thursday. You were at Nationals Park. How about the guest list today? Joe Beninati, the voice and face of the Capitals on NBC Sports Washington, will be on the call tonight. He joins us at 11 a.m. coming up in about 45 minutes. John Walton, who is the voice of the Capitals here on 106.7, the Fan on the radio side, will be with us at 1 o'clock. So we got the two guys that call the games all season long. And Ryan Kerrigan, who got the house rocking at Capital One Arena on Saturday night, stops by for a chat on the Caps at 1:30. You're listening to The Fan. Next, what got into the team on Saturday? Can they carry it over to tonight?
Call from Mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Fogle, Carolina, turning it over. It's Ovechkin stepping in with Backstrom. Smith Pelly to trailer. Now to Backstrom. Low shooting. Scores! Nick Backstrom has done it again. His second of the game. It's 2-0. Washington!
Grant and Danny on the Fan. That is the voice of John Walton. He will be on the show today at 1, coming up in about 40 minutes. Before that, at 11, Joe Beninati stops by. Caps, Canes, Game 6, Washington leading the series 3-2. They'll drop the puck a little after 7 o'clock tonight right here on the Fan. In Raleigh, you can listen to the contest in its entirety on your flagship home for the Capitals. Nats will be over on 99.1, just as a programming note. They get started later, though. They're in Coors Field in Colorado. They'll first pitch right around 8:45 or so. On Saturday night, Pete, Nicholas Backstrom scored his fourth and fifth of this series through five games. One on the power play, one at even strength. Brett Connolly tallied his first. Tom Wilson on the power play, his second. Nick Dowd, the first ever penalty shot ever scored in the playoffs by a Capital. Win yourself a drink at the bar with that trivia question. And Alex Ovechkin on the power play, his third. It was a everything that could go right did kind of night. Braden Holtby pitches a shutout, seventh of his career, more than any Capital in the playoffs in history, moving past Olaf Kolzig for the most in the team's annals. What was different on Saturday? Why were the Caps able to do that night what they weren't able to do in the first four games of this series, obliterate Carolina? That's the question we've got for you at 800-636-1067. We want to hear your answer. And maybe more importantly, Pete, are they able to take what they did on Saturday and do it again tonight on the road in a hostile environment?
I think the opportunity is there from this reason. Why? I thought the Stanley Cup champions played with a sense of urgency that a championship hockey team plays with. I thought that was first and foremost the other night. The energy, the puck movement on the power play, obviously a little bit sharper. But I also think we are starting to the other night was a perfect indication in my mind where Carolina played with such energy at home. And that roster just continues to get shorthanded and more shorthanded. I think that may have started to finally take a little bit of toll on the Hurricanes on Saturday. And I think if the Capitals come out with that same sense of urgency tonight and can get the ancillary play from the third and fourth line, which means you can play them more. When they don't play well, you can't play them more. So you can't wear down the other team. I think that's part of it. Todd Reardon could play that group a lot more minutes the other night and because they were a lot more effective. If that happens again tonight, they play with that same urgency, I think you can take advantage of a Hurricanes roster that just continues to seemingly get more and more depleted each and every game.
I thought the difference was their forecheck. And really, it was about playing a physical brand of hockey that they hadn't previously. But they were able to because they got pucks behind the net and they got pucks in deep in a way that they weren't able to over the previous four games. There was a great stat that I saw that meant a lot to me, and I thought meant a lot to the series before the start of Game 5, and it was from Mike Vogel. He tweeted that as of the start of Game 5, the Capitals had put just 36 hits on Carolina defensemen in the series. It was their lowest total of hits against an opposing defense corps of any of the 16 teams in the playoffs. They're actually minus 23 in that metric, meaning the Hurricanes were out forechecking the Caps by 25. Only the Penguins, who got swept in four games at minus 28, were worse in that area. And that dictates, to some extent, Corsi and puck possession. You know, they were 38% with their Corsi, which, again, was worst among all the teams in the postseason. That all changed because they were able to be heavy and beat Carolina up behind their own net. They got turnovers, and because of that, they were able to cycle. They set up shop. They tilted the ice. That's what I saw that was most different. Now, what I can't answer, and this is what Todd Reirden needs to answer, why weren't they able to get to that in the first four games and they were in the fifth? I hate to just say it's about effort and compete level. I don't think it's that simple. I think there is some strategy and some scheme to it that worked. But to me, that was the story of the game.
I think it's definitely, again, I think it comes back to the sense of urgency. Just how about the thought, the potential thought of a hit? Dougie Hamilton thinks Alexander Ovechkin is getting ready to knock him basically out, and he kind of shies away from the potential hit. It ends up in a turnover, and Brett Connolly puts the puck in the net. It's the potential thought of a hit in that situation that helps turn the tide and eventually turns into a goal for Washington.
Luke Thomas, voice guys, feeling good about the Caps. What's going on, man? How are you?
Hello, my name is Luke.
Steve.
Hello.
Oh, this is not Luke Thomas, voice guy. Well, that was my fault. I saw Steve in Silver Spring, and I assumed it was a different guy. What's going on, buddy?
This is Steve in Silver Spring. I'm sorry.
No, this is my stupidity. I didn't realize there could actually be two Steves in Silver Spring. Normally, we've got a guy that falls in as Steve in Silver Spring with a nickname. But this is a different guy, so go ahead.
Yes, how are you this morning?
I'm great.
Yeah, this is my first hockey call of the year. I do call from time to time. Good to be on.
Appreciate it.
The only thing I wanted to say was the game Saturday night reminded me of what the Caps did against Tampa last year. They blew a lead. Tampa took over the lead in the series, and the Caps came out the next game and totally changed the way they played. They clamped down defensively. They hit everything that moved, and they stymied Tampa Bay, and they went on and played that way all the way to the Stanley Cup. And the game Saturday night, to me, that's what they did there. They've done an adjustment defensively. They're more aggressive on the checking. And with all the losses, Kempney, Beagle, and now Oshie, they still look great on Saturday. And if they can play that way, and they did do something different defensively, I don't know what you call it. They clamped
down. Well, I'll tell you what's different, Steve. Thank you for the call. Jonas Siegenthaler is terrific, and he's played really well over two games now. I don't know what he is long term. I don't know what he's going to be over the next 7, 8, 9 seasons. I do know that he's bigger and more physical than Christian Jews. He's more confident right now. And because he's a left-handed shot, he gives them the ability to have three pairs they can roll as if it's just the middle of the season again. And they don't have to do these weird fire drills where they're throwing Carlson out there on his offside and they're taking a Norris Trophy caliber defenseman and playing him on a side of the ice he didn't play on all year. I think the addition of Siegenthaler to give them some confidence to just go right, left, three different pairs, Niskanen, Orlov, Orpik, Jensen, and Carlson and Siegenthaler was a game changer for them defensively. Ian's in D.C. on the fan. What's going on, man?
Yeah, I want to comment on a couple of things. On the game individually, I think what occurs is anytime you have a better team in the playoffs, even in hockey where we saw the 8-1 upsets and the 7-2 upsets, you have an expectation that you're going to win the series quickly, especially after the first two games. The team, the fans feel very confident. And you almost have to remind yourself that Carolina, despite their seeding, is a team that is young, kind of coming on the upswing there, and they haven't had a home playoff game in a long time. So I think the energy from their team, their fans, their organization was palpable. And I think a lot of times in hockey, also sports like, say, baseball, maybe even soccer, when a game gets away from you kind of early, it can get away from you in a hurry. And a team mentally, just like anybody would, you check out a little bit. In terms of what happened in game five, I think what really occurred is not only a little bit of a renewed focus from the Capitals and the organization being like, we don't want to go down 3-2 with them going back to Carolina and the crowd they have, is also like a focus more on that forechecking you talked about, being more aggressive at each point of attack. But I do want to push back on one thing. I think there's a natural inclination when you lose a star player, the Patrick Ewing theory, everybody picks up their game to make up for Oshie. What I don't want to do is overplay the impact of DSP. While he is a crowd pleaser and a fun guy to be around, he wasn't even on the roster for a reason.
True. No, that's fair. He made a big impact, though, in Game 5. Would they have won the game without him? Unequivocally so. They won 6-0. But the energy he brought just in the arena, if nothing else. You know, if you think that the fans make an impact and a difference, the loudest they got was when he came out on the ice for an ovation in the early first period. He had a massive hit on his first shift. He had a shot on net on his next shift. And in the game, ultimately, the fourth line, which he was a big part of and he was in the middle of all of it, had its best game of the series. So while I'm not going to sit here and tell you he's the reason why they won at all, he had 5 hits and a shot on goal in 10 minutes on the ice, and the line he was on improved substantially, and he had a better game than any fourth liner had had previously. It was good to see him back. I didn't think he would have that big of an impact. I said going into Saturday on Friday's show, he's kind of just the guy that we overinflate because of his playoff run. But if he can play like he played in Game 5, the Caps are going to be in really good shape. If you want to weigh in on the 6-0 beatdown of the Canes, we'd love to hear from you. What was different? How did the Caps do it? 800-636-1.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Grant and Danny. Pete is in for Danny today. He'll be back tomorrow. You're listening to 106.7 The Fan. The first round of the NFL draft is Thursday night. We're 3 days away. Cap schedule permitting, you and I, Pete, will be at the Anthem on Thursday to broadcast the first round of the draft live from the Redskins draft party, which it's going to be a really good time if we get to do it. The Caps have played game one of the second round,
I think, 3 straight years, but we got a shot to have a really fun and, I think, quality show for everyone on Thursday.
Yeah, and based on the potential guest list of those, as they always say, scheduled to appear, a lot of great Redskins, a lot of other great personalities that will be in the building coming up on Thursday night. So come on down, join us, and of course we can sit there and commiserate together as to whether the Redskins actually keep the 15th pick, make the 15th pick, or trade the 15th pick.
We'll get to some rumblings top of the draft board in just a minute and look at that number 15 selection Washington might get to make in just a couple, but want to wrap up the calls right now on the Caps at 800-636-1067. Those of you at the arena, what a night, what a game it was on Saturday. They play game 6 with Carolina on the road today. Dave is in Waldorf. How are you, sir?
Grant, Pete, what up, though?
Hey, what's up, buddy?
Hey, nothing much, nothing much. Hey, listen, man, Grant, you and I, we seen it front and center Saturday, man. So if we want to win tonight to carry over, first thing first is we got to be physical again. More physical play. We have to be physical. I think I heard Pete say one of the Canes shied away from a hit from Ovechkin because, I mean, the way we
Dougie
came out.
Dougie Hamilton, business decision. Yes. Wanted nothing to do with him. Now, they said after the game he thought it was an icing. I don't know if I completely buy that. I think he just wanted to get out of the big rig's way.
Exactly. He wanted to get out of the way. He wanted no parts of Ovechkin. So that physical play was definitely important. And another thing, the previous caller said, listen, let's not discredit anything from DSP. No, he did not win us the game, but his energy, his presence, him being there alone did a lot. Like you said, man, that crowd was rooting and very rowdy for DSP. Even after the game, they was chanting his name. During the game, they was chanting his name. So he definitely made a difference. Although he didn't score, him being out there on that ice, he made a difference.
And Dave, you were at the game, so you saw it, just like I did. And I think you could probably notice it. I'm not sure if you were watching at home on high-definition television. But if you were in the building, it was very clear. There were two storylines that fans cared the most about. TJ Oshie's injury. They were chanting TJ Oshie late in the game. And Devontae Smith-Pelly. They were chanting DSP off and on all night. He gave them a boost. We had him on all season. On Grant and Danny here, Pete, as you know, as our regular guest. He got demoted to Hershey. None of us saw that coming when the year began. He had a really disappointing year. Frankly, he had a bad season. The demotion was not unwarranted. It didn't come out of nowhere. He wasn't playing particularly well. But I say that just to say that I had maybe forgotten how much people loved him. Like when he came up on stage at the parade, the reaction. I don't know if it's just that he scored 7 goals in the playoffs and he only had 7 in the regular season, that the elevation of play, if it was anyone, would be on that level. I can't tell you why. It could be that he looks different than all the Capitals. It could be that he is completely likable and one of the more friendly, warm-hearted guys on the roster. I don't know. I just know that DC has a love affair with a fourth liner in Devontae Smith-Pelly.
Well, the guy was a productive player. You're a productive player, you're going to be loved by all. I mean, let's face it.
He scored goals that
helped lead to a championship. I mean, for a while, John Drews was a hero in this town because of his play in the playoffs at one point for the Capitals. But look, I mean, anything that can get your crowd into it. And Todd Reirden rolled the dice. I mean, look, nothing motivates you more as someone who's been involved in sports, had coaching stints myself, kids who play in at a high level, nothing motivates you more than having minutes taken away from you. Getting sent to the minor leagues is embarrassing to you when you've been a pro like he has for the years that he has. Nothing should motivate you more than having your minutes taken away. Clearly, message received when he got back out on the ice the other night. He gave them some jump. The crowd got into the game, and it all kind of worked together. If they're down 3-0, the crowd's not performing the same way and yelling the same way in the middle of the second period if they're losing 3-0 every time DSP comes out on the ice. So that all kind of worked together in the flow of the game to make things happen the other night. And look, you had to get that crowd into the game early. That the Carolina's crowd was a tremendous boost to them. You had to get your crowd involved in the game early. Todd Reirden rolled the dice that DSP would help be able to do that, and it worked out for him.
Yeah, he struck gold in all of decisions in game 5. Speaking of getting the crowd going early, they better do that again tonight. Try to take the crowd out of the game. The opposite of that is you come out, you have a heavy first shift, you beat some people around on the boards, you get that first goal, because I've been stunned, I've been impressed. I'm completely enamored with hockey's renaissance in Carolina at PNC Arena. Having been there on my bachelor party last year, we were able to get as many tickets as we wanted really close to the glass for no money, and nobody was there but Caps fans. Seeing that building on TV now and what it looks like has been pretty amazing.
You went to Raleigh on your bachelor party?
I went to Raleigh-Durham. Yeah, we went to a Duke game at Chapel Hill, Cameron Indoor, rather. Yeah. I went to Caps-Canes, and we hung out in Raleigh, like a college town. Went to a bunch of bars and did some stuff like that. Hit a couple of games. Pretty amazing.
Look at you.
It's a good time. Let's get to the draft really quickly. Joe Beninati's coming up in about 20 minutes. Still want to get into Strasburg and the Nationals before the end of the hour. But a new mock came out this morning that caught my attention from Chad Reuter from NFL.com. He's still got Kyler Murray going 1-1 to the Cardinals. It seems to me like anybody who's not picking Murray first overall right now, Pete, is just basically trying to be different. Here's what was a staggering update, though, for me. He is a mock where he's allowing trades. And I believe he had 4 trades in the first round, 3 of which were teams moving to get quarterbacks. At number 2 overall, he has the Raiders moving into that second spot, the 49ers coming back, and he's got Oakland taking Drew Locke, the quarterback from Missouri.
love his talent, wish he would drop to 15, because if the Redskins are entertaining a quarterback at that position, I believe he has the goods to be an NFL quarterback. Clearly, Mayock and Gruden have seen something that indicates that they like his ability eventually for that offense. However, you know, you've got a pretty established quarterback already that they've given you every indication that they still like. They've got so many needs, I'm not sure they can afford to trade up to get a guy like Locke, unless you think Locke, you trade up because you think that guy can start for you right now.
Well, Derek Carr has been your starter for 5 years, to your point, but he's coming off of a season that is completely replacement level. 16 starts last year, about 7 yards per attempt, 19 touchdowns, 10 picks, a low 90s rating. I could find you 25 guys in the league.
But is there anything about what that team was doing last year? Just the same thing we say about Josh Rosen, where we've given him a pass for what was happening in Arizona last year if you trade for him. Can we really hold any of those players accountable for what was happening within that organization last year in transition?
No, and I think that's fair, but Rosen's being replaced is my point. And so it wouldn't be crazy if John Gruden watched that performance last year and said, I didn't pick this guy. I came out of the Monday Night Football booth and I was handed this guy. You know how much he loves picking quarterbacks and taking his own guys.
Of course.
I wouldn't rule out the Raiders with a passer, I guess is my point. But Pete, I'd be really surprised if they came up to two to do it. I mean, that would take a lot of draft pick
compensation. I think you can get Locke at four where they're at.
I agree with you. I'm almost sure you could, actually. I'm close to positive that you could. A Nick Bosa third to the Jets in this mock.
What a gift that would be for the Jets.
They should do a backflip if they could pull that off. Quinnen Williams falls into San Francisco's lap at number four, which would be a great pick. And then, speaking of quarterbacks and trades, Reuters got the Giants moving up one pick to take Daniel Jones out of Duke. Again, I don't think they'd have to come up from 6 to 5 to get Daniel Jones, but he's got three quarterbacks in the top five. Here's the question for you guys on the Hadid carpet cleaning listener lines at 800-636-1067. Everyone's kind of assuming that we know what's going to happen with Murray going one and no other quarterback going before the Giants. But year in and year out, almost annually at this point, teams regularly come up the board in the top five to get QBs. Are we sure that's not going to happen this year? And if somebody does, what team might that be? How many quarterbacks do you think go before the Redskins at 15? That's the question for you on Grant and Danny here on The Fan.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
The Redskins have the 15th pick in Thursday night's first round. Welcome back, Grant and Danny. Pete is in for Danny today on 106.7 The Fan. We're going over a mock draft that came out via NFL.com this morning, and the specifics of this mock don't really matter. It's one opinion of dozens and dozens that you can find from media members all around the country. But what I found intriguing was this mock did allow for trades, and there were several teams moving up to get quarterbacks, including teams like the Raiders going up a couple of picks to get Drew Locke, the Giants moving up one selection to get Daniel Jones. And it's easy for me to sit here and be cynical and say that would never happen, but we have seen the Chicago Bears do something nobody thought they needed to do or would do when they moved up a pick to get Mitchell Trubisky. Now, you can make up your own mind if that's worked out or not to this point. He played decently this past year, and they made the playoffs, albeit thanks largely to their defense. But coming out of North Carolina, he played 13 games. They saw enough to say, we can't possibly stand pat. Someone might leapfrog us. We got to move up one pick and give up a bunch to do it. The other thing that was interesting here, the trend is continuing where Dwayne Haskins, Pete, continues to fall. 50 touchdowns at Ohio State. A local product who played at Bullis in Maryland, lived with Sean Springs, and was mentored by him in the Ashburn area. Haskins, who started at Maryland and finished with the Buckeyes in the Big Ten, falls to the Miami Dolphins, who trade up to number 9 with Buffalo to take him. But if this plays out, the Redskins are on the clock at 15. That means Murray is gone, Haskins is gone, Locke is gone, Jones is gone. If that does happen, They should just kiss quarterback pick goodbye until second round and just go get an edge rusher or one of the better defensive players in the class, because a lot of those guys are then going to fall.
No doubt. You can get Will Grier in the second round if you want to address your quarterback need. Feel very strongly about Will Grier. Older guy, a little bit more mature now, got a kid. What happened to him in his career down at Florida before he went to West Virginia is not going to be a factor now. I believe there's a lot of maturity that has gone on with him. So you can address that in the second round. Look, there's so many things you could do. You could have somebody that falls in love with a guy that wants to trade you a significant piece, maybe in the first three rounds of this draft, to move up to 15 to get a guy. That if you can't get one of the top quarterbacks at that position, there is so much going to be available to you. There is going to be a buffet of people available to you to address any need that you have at that pick, that you could trade down a couple of spots and pick up an extra, even if it's just an extra second pick, late second round or early third round pick. I would entertain doing that at that point, because I think there is so much depth in this draft at positions that the Redskins need to address immediately and get a player that can step in and play right now.
One thing I'll tell you that I wouldn't want, and this is a pick that a lot of people like a whole lot, and I'm just not on board with it. It's actually what the Redskins did at number 15 in this NFL.com mock this morning.
Yeah.
They took DK Metcalf.
No way.
The wide receiver from Ole Miss. I have no interest. There is a lack of college productivity. There is an alarmingly problematic change of direction ability for a guy that is one of the great athletes in the history of the combine. I mean, his 40 time, his size, he is an Adonis. If you have not seen this dude, he went viral just because he took his shirt off one time.
He's David Boston.
He looks a lot like David Boston, but here's the difference. David Boston was a hell of an NFL wide receiver for a while, and maybe he will be. I will gladly be wrong and tell you I botched DK Metcalf when and if he develops, but I've been tricked too many times by these guys who aren't great route runners. When I say change of direction, you look at three cone and some of the drills that he struggled with, that starting and stopping is a problem. All the things you need to be able to do in the NFL. You need quick twitch, explosion, and you need the propensity to beat guys at the line of scrimmage. He's a straight line track star. So if you just want to get behind everyone and catch the football, that's well and good. But he's been hurt a lot, and he hasn't performed at college. I'm letting him be somebody else's experiment.
And haven't we already had a first round pick at wide receiver who's had to do too much learning on the job? Because that's exactly what would happen here, in my opinion, with this particular player, if that's the case. He can do one thing for you. You mentioned he can run in a straight line. The rest of it, you've got to teach him what to do. Your team is not in any position right now to have guys at the number 15 pick who are doing significant learning on the job. Every guy's got to learn a little bit when they get up here, but he's got significant other things to the parts of his game that need to work and need to be worked on before he can make an impact. That guy at 15 has got to make an impact for you.
The guy that now I don't really know what to think as far as the Redskins at 15 and a potential partnering with him would be Montez Sweat. Now, Sweat, I was sweating. I was all over coming out of the combine. He's the edge for Mississippi State, who's considered to be one of the best edge rushers in the class. But there are apparently teams that are very scared because of a heart condition that he has. I was reading this weekend that maybe even clubs could be taking him off the board. I'm sure Doug Williams will be asked about this at his press conference in Ashburn today at noon, a little over an hour from now. We will air that press conference right here on Grant and Danny, so make sure you're listening in an hour and 7 minutes when Doug Williams, who is the vice president of football operations for the Skins, takes to the podium. But Pete, I had Sweat over Brian Burns, who I really like as well, who's the pass rusher from Florida State. Burns has suddenly become the safer pick here and maybe even the more likely candidate. What if both are there? What do you do?
Look, I mean, the safer pick, if you're Jay Gruden and this group at this time, if you're Jay, you got to fight for the guy that you know potentially is going to be there every day and not have a problem. That's Brian Burns. And Brian Burns showed up in a lot of mock drafts for the Redskins at number 15 at that point. You could also look at a guy like Rashawn Gary. If you're that, you know, hell-bent on taking an edge rusher at that point, you could do that. Could be some good offensive lineman prospects on the board at that point. I mean, if an Andre Dillard slides to that pick, boy, you would have to think long and hard about taking that guy, in my opinion, because he's the kind of tackle that you can really develop as a replacement for either one of the ones that you have right now long-term going forward. So, I mean, to me, so many things. As I said, it's going to be a buffet of availability for the Redskins at 15, And they've got to make the right pick. You can't blow the pick in this situation.
More on the draft next hour. And again, Doug Williams will be heard here on Grant and Danny today, the press conference live at noon. Joe Beninati, NBC Sports Washington, calls Caps games each and every broadcast. He is keeping you company. You invite him into your living room. Well, you will invite him into your lives via the radio next right here on The Fan.
Spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.